Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Dr. Natalie Bellini, and Dr. Diana Isaacs, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve diabetes care. Produced by HCP Live Endocrinology, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have a special impromptu episode today because we heard, we got the news today from the Biden administration about the first 10 drugs that are set for price negotiation from the Inflation Reduction Act. So, Natalie, can you give us a little bit of background on this and what's going on?
So the Biden administration passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and some of the law has to do with negotiating for the first time ever Medicare willingness to pay and drug pricing, right? So this is really new for the U.S. And outside the U.S. countries, this happens all the time, right? In Canada, the Canadian government, for example, negotiates the drug price they are willing to pay and the pharmaceutical company is willing to accept for the medications that are sold there, right? And here, there is none of that. And now, for the first time ever, the first 10 drugs have been selected. And interestingly, and why we're on this call today, is several of them are actually diabetes drugs, including Jardiance, Januvia, Farxiga, as well as insulin from Novo Nordisk specifically.
Yeah, so it's really fascinating. So yeah, 10 drugs have been chosen to start this, and more drugs will be added in the future. And there was a bunch of criteria for how they selected these drugs. They were looking for high-cost drugs that were costing CMS a lot of money that are used by a lot of people that don't have generics at this time. And so, yeah, it's just going to be really interesting kind of how this plays out, and especially thinking about some of these diabetes drugs, like, for example, Januvia. That's one drug in the class of DPP-4 inhibitors, right? So what about the other drugs in the class? Or in the case of Farxiga and Jardiance, those are two drugs of the SGLT2 inhibitor class. But we know there's others. Now there's Benzabi, and there's Invokana, and there's Siglatro. And so it's like, it's just going to be interesting because these specific drugs now are subject to these negotiations, which will likely alter the price and make it lower cost. But it's like, well, how will that affect the use of the other drugs? And are those going to be next? I don't know. It's all very fascinating.
I think you're right. So, you know, if let's just say Medicare, you know, negotiates a price of drug X in the category of SGLT2 inhibitors, right? Whether it be Farxiga or Jardiance, will the rest of the drug manufacturers bring that cost down to match it? Because if not, all of the companies are going to say, well, then everyone gets brand X. Everyone gets this Flozin, I would guess, right? But again, this is all speculation and how this is going to work. I do, you know, some of the wording, the you know, they'll publish an agreed upon drugs and the selective drugs aren't even going to be covered until 2024. So this isn't going September 1st. This is going to be a process. And I think we're all sort of curious how it's going to end up playing out, right? So then those prices come into effect starting January 1st of 2026. So we've got till next year till the negotiations are done in September. Then the first discounted drugs would actually not come out till 2026. And then thereafter, they'll negotiate for up to 15 more drugs in under Part D for 2027 and 2028, right? And up to 20 more each year thereafter. So ultimately, this guidance will be that we will add more and more drugs. And I think what's happening is they're looking at the highest cost drugs out of pocket for both Medicare as well as the person with the disease that we're treating, and then kind of pulling them off the top. And it makes sense, but this is not something that is going to affect our prescribing habits or Medicare beneficiaries for a couple of years still.
Yeah, and my understanding is there's also some pending litigation because some of these drug companies are thrilled with this process. And it'll be just really interesting. One thing that I think is really good is that what they're saying is there won't be a lot of transparency in this process, that it's going to be public hearings and they're going to be very transparent about all of the negotiations and everything, which would be really great because right now a lot of this, there's no transparency and there's rebates and it's just unclear. And what ends up happening is the person with diabetes or other conditions with high expense drugs is the one that really is out. So the transparency will be great. I did read some information about how this could impact future research, future new agents that come to the market. We all know the U.S. kind of puts the bill for the rest of the world when it comes to research and drug innovation from our high cost medications. And so there's just got to be a balance because obviously we want the research, we want the innovation. That's really important too. Is there a way to do it where we can make these drugs affordable for everyone and really reduce health disparities instead of only the people that are rich and have means able to afford?
I absolutely agree, right? Does that mean that in another country that does get negotiations already, that already has them, are their costs going to rise slightly so that our costs can come down slightly, right? Is that one way that we solve this problem so that other countries are actually taking on the burden of research as well? These are all things that I don't know that we'll ever know all of the data around it, but I do know that you and I both every day in our practices see people who struggle with the cost of medications overall. And so I think we've all agreed for years that something needs to be done. Is this the greatest idea? Is this not? It depends on who you ask and when, right? And politically, there's a lot of politics here, isn't there?
Yeah.
And there are going to be some people that, and I'm not getting into the weeds of that, right? What I do know is that I want people to be able to afford the medications. And the challenges become things like Farxiga and Jardiance that are specifically called out have so many more benefits than we thought they would when they were first FDA approved, right? The renal potential, the heart failure, the cardiovascular risk reduction, those are so important. And so we really try hard to get them covered and get them covered at a reasonable amount. So I think that's ultimately, is it going to ultimately help more people afford these medications? Let's hope so. But I don't know how you look at a list and say these 10, but not more, these 12, right? How did they pick 10? And I think it's all part of the act itself is we were going to start with sort of the top 10 of what they're paying for and kind of go backwards. But it'll all be interesting. This is going to be a very interesting couple of years.
Yeah, I want to comment a little more on the list of 10 because I was happy to see other cardiovascular drugs like apixaban and rivaroxaban for treating blood clots, as well as the Entresto heart failure, and even some, I guess, surprises in terms of drugs for cancer and drugs for rheumatoid arthritis or ulcerative colitis. So it's definitely a variety of drugs, but the one class that I think I was surprised not to see are GLP-1 receptor agonists. I mean, we all know that those have a pretty hefty price tag around $1,000+ per month. And so it's surprising to me that we don't see something like Trulicity or Ozempic on there, or even Mounjaro. So that is interesting. And I did read some commentary though that sounded promising about potentially some of the money being saved from this, like all this and kind of these negotiations, maybe though could apply to covering some of these other drugs, which we know have benefits, and especially for obesity, which includes a lot of people. And as we are expecting more drugs to be available for treating obesity that may be expensive, like the GLP-1 receptor agonist and like tirzepatide, would that occur? Because I think that would be a big win. If the cost savings from these negotiations applied to covering obesity drugs, I think we'd all win in that situation.
Or even closing that donut hole that we keep talking about, right? Like, so many of our patients, both you and I, when we see them, it's like, oh, here comes September or here comes October, because you know they're going to end up in this hole, this gap, that they have to cover the majority of the cost of their medications until they get to catastrophic coverage, right? I think that's an option too, is can we use the money that is saved to help close that gap so that people don't end up where they are? I also think it will be interesting to see the next set, right? What comes next and how this is going to play out for people as well as Medicare, which is a payer, right? That's what they are. And we have more and more people becoming Medicare eligible every day. So yeah, a lot to stay tuned for.
Yeah. And I guess I was a little surprised by the insulin being on there, especially specifically calling out like aspart-novo's insulin, as opposed to like, we don't see Humalog, Lispro, Gem. We don't see Sanofi's or don't see a Traceba, which is a Novo insulin, but they specifically called out Novolog and Fiasp. And so it, that part is interesting, but also because of the fact that we have the $35 cap now on insulin. So we have at least one solution to help with that. So that was kind of surprising to me. And I'll be curious if our insulin manufacturers get included on that in the future list or kind of what's...
And truly, I would, you know, we know that there's more basal insulin used than mealtime insulin.
Right.
So I'm very shocked at the fact that there isn't a basal insulin on this list rather than a Fiasp, Novolog. That was shocking to me, because the glargine, the different formulations of glargine, and then the longer acting, both Toujeo, you know, the new 300 glargine, as well as Traceba, we certainly see way more of that in clinical practice than we do mealtime insulin, right? So why didn't one of those end up on there? That's a whole other, you know, explanation that I can't wait to hear long term. Absolutely.
Right.
And you're right. Now we have $35 a month copay. So to me, it's like, save that spot, honestly, for something else, right? I wonder if the GLP-1s too, at the time that they did the analysis, weren't being used as often. Right. And as much. And so the cost was less relative to other things. The other thing is, now that we have some initial data on the cardiovascular risk reduction with GLP-1 in obesity alone, that we had talked about on our one of our most recent podcasts, is that going to play a role in this too? Then, you know, because now we can say with obesity, there is a cardiovascular risk reduction, right? All by itself of almost 20%. You know, will that play in the role of Medicare starting to cover, you know, weight loss and the GLP-1 for weight loss? I mean, there's a lot at stake here.
Right. That is a really interesting comment, because, yeah, I was so surprised that GLP-1 agonists aren't on there. But to your point, maybe the drug cost isn't as high because people are just not able to access them. They're having to pay so much out of pocket that they're not on them as often as they really should be, according to guidelines. So
And we're not seeing a lot of the use still coming from a lot of primary cares. We're not seeing GLP-1 use, where I think in primary care, we're seeing a lot of SGLT2 inhibitor use, for example, right? You know, right now, the guidelines in ADA say if you have a cardiovascular risk, put them on a GLP-1 regardless of their A1C. And that's new in the last couple of years, right? If you have, you know, kidney risk, put them on an SGLT2 regardless of A1C. And those are new. So I think the numbers, as we look at the potential for these two products, these two classes anyway, are only going to go up. I would think that in the next go round or in the next few go rounds, that there will be a reevaluation, and some of those GLP-1s will end up on there.
Yeah, so the evaluation period was June 1st, 2022 to May 31st, 2023, which accounted for $50.5 billion of the drugs for the Part D. So that is an astounding, astounding amount. But going back to, I have a lot of patients that are on Medicare that are simply not able to afford the use of GLP-1 agonists. And it's sometimes they're covered, but it's just their copay is so much. We've been fortunate. There's good patient assistance. So if people qualify for that, we're able to access them that way. But yeah, maybe the Medicare Part D isn't paying that much because people just can't afford their share of them. So
right. That's another whole other, right. Yeah, I know. We see that in non-Medicare people with diabetes too. The copay can be, you know, $75 a month, $100 a month. You know, and then there's a deductible. When we get to the Medicare, it can be prohibitively expensive, especially for those people who are on more than one of these brand name products. They've already had a heart attack, and they've, you know, what, so they've got other issues. They might have kidney disease and some cardiovascular issues, and they've had a heart attack. They need to be on three of the drugs on this one list, right? Okay. So when you think about it that way, that's you know, the cost is for a person with diabetes with some, even if they're just mild complications at this point, just an, you know, a hint of complication, it can be astronomical.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much, Natalie, for the amazing discussion. So I guess we'll all stay tuned to see what ends up happening. Thanks, everyone, for tuning into this episode of Diabetes Dialogue.